Hello, and welcome to a very special series I'm moderating on diversity, equity, and inclusivity by CME Outfitters. This CMEO briefcase is entitled Racial and Ethnic Disparities in Dermatology Care, Real-World Strategies to Address Inequities in Treatment and Outcomes. This program is supported by an educational grant by Johnson & Johnson. My name is Dr. Monica Peek, and I am the Ellen H. Block Professor of Health Justice at the University of Chicago, where I also serve as the Associate Director for the Chicago Center for Diabetes Translation Research. I'm also the Director of Research for the McLean Center for Clinical Medical Ethics, also at the University of Chicago. I'm delighted to be joined today by my distinguished colleague, Dr. Candrice Heath. Dr. Heath, would you mind introducing yourself for the audience today?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me today. I am Dr. Candrice Heath. I'm an adult and pediatric dermatologist, and I'm a clinical assistant professor, adjunct in the Center for Urban Bioethics at Temple University in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Thank you so much for joining us. So just to start, I want to note that this program was designed to build upon some foundational concepts that we've already covered in previous DE&I activities. And so to learn more about the impact of systemic racism on healthcare and health disparities, as well as how racial and ethnic disparities present in the field of dermatology, we encourage you to engage in these foundational programs, which are linked here. So today we're going to do a deeper dive into a specific topic within the field of dermatology. And so before we begin, I do want to clarify that as colleagues, Candrice and I have decided that we're going to address each other by our first names to create more of a collegial atmosphere. And so Candrice, I really look forward to our candid discussion today. Thank you so much for joining us. Me as a primary care provider and you as a subspecialist, I think we'll have a lot to engage for our audience today. I'm going to start by reviewing our first learning objective for our program, which is to implement strategies to improve differential diagnosis and the acute treatment for patients with psoriasis, which is something that I see a lot in my practice. And so I'm really excited to be able to talk about that today. I want to start, though, this discussion by examining some of the social determinants or some of the drivers. We have lots of different names for this now of health, specifically for dermatology care. And so would you mind just kicking off the discussion for our audience today and talking about some of these relevant factors?
Absolutely. I'm so happy that we're starting our discussion here. I think often this topic is an afterthought to say, well, wow, where did things go wrong? So I'm happy that we are talking about this at the forefront, even before we get into the clinical details about psoriasis. So just, you know, for an example, when we think about some of the social determinants of health, we may think about access to care as one of the most common things that come to mind. But I hope that with the review of this slide that the listeners will also be able to understand new things as well. So not only just barriers to access, like just not being able to, you know, physically get to a doctor, but then to be able to think about some other things that contribute to those as well. So low health literacy, I think, is one of the things that people often don't think about. Even a lack of knowledge about the skin condition that they may have. And even maybe saying, you know, is it really even beneficial for me to even seek care? So those are some things that may go through some of our patients' minds when they think about interfacing with healthcare in general. Not to include other things like socioeconomic stressors and just even having the time to see a doctor. All of those can contribute to being patients not even being able to get to us. The good thing is we do have some solutions on the horizon. And so there may be some barriers to awareness that can be addressed by educational materials. And even the clinicians who are joining in right now, we're part of the solution because we are seeking this as an educational opportunity for our patients to learn more about our patients. Barriers to access and assessment. Some of the solutions include, you know, community health workers, which are becoming more and more integrated into our medical field at this time. Also meeting patients where they are with telehealth, for an example. And finally, last but not least, even using other solutions to really address the acceptance and adherence that may plague some of our patients by using things like text reminders or educating people about how the insurance systems work. And this also is a great opportunity to have our community health workers also involved in the care team as well.
Thank you. Candace, so important to highlight some of these points that are relevant for all of our care, but particularly for subspecialty care and dermatology, where people may think, well, it's just the skin, how important can it be? It's not my heart. But we know that the skin is sort of the window into the rest of the body, and systemic disease can be manifesting there. It's important to address these barriers in all care, including dermatology. So, thank you for that. Let's go ahead and jump right into a patient case and see how some of these things may play out. So, can you start us off by presenting Miguel for our audience today?
Sure. So Miguel is our first patient that we'll be talking about today, and he is a 16-year-old who is from Puerto Rico, and he identifies as Black Hispanic, and he is coming to the dermatology clinic after visiting the emergency department for a rash that he's had about 6 months. And the rash primarily was on his elbows and legs. And, it's really preventing him from being able to wear some of the types of clothing that he really enjoys wearing, like short sleeves or even just shorts. So those are the things that really triggered his visit for today. And I
Yes.
would like to really point out that, yes, this is a program about dermatology, but I really want to make sure that people see that he presented to the emergency department first and then to the specialty clinic. So we're going to dive into a little bit more details about that coming up as well.
Absolutely. I was actually volunteering at a free clinic on Sunday, so just a few days ago, and someone came there for a dermatological problem. And so many people, like you said, will present in urgent or situations where there is not an established primary care provider for skin conditions. And particularly, I think it's important that this is a teenager who, they're super concerned about their appearance. And if they can't wear the clothes that they want to be able to wear, that may be an emergency for them. And
Right.
so it's important for us to be able to consider all of the things that are relevant to people as they're showing up in our healthcare system.
Right. And even I would definitely want the clinicians to take note that this rash has been present for 6 months.
6 months.
So it's been there for a long time, but yet the first stop is to actually go to the emergency department. As a teenager, you can't really bring yourself to the doctor's office, so you have to depend on a parent. So I wonder if maybe the parent had to work and not able to get to appointments. And so the emergency department, because it's always open, may be a way for people to be able to, get in and seek care when it's convenient for them economically.
Exactly. So let's talk about some of the disparities when it comes to dermatology care for conditions specifically like psoriasis.
So for psoriasis, I'm glad that we're talking about this topic because it's not one of the most common topics that people tend to think about in skin of color. But as we are going through and doing more research, and what we're finding is that yes, psoriasis, although not talked about as often in the past, can certainly happen to people of color, and it definitely looks different. So one of the primary things I think in the disparity is actually being able to make the diagnosis of psoriasis. So it may look different. So Black patients may report having more scalp psoriasis. The lesions of psoriasis often don't look like some of the other pictures in the textbook. They may have more of a violaceous appearance instead of a bright red appearance. And so some of those can lead to it being hard to make the diagnosis. And even when the psoriasis areas get better, there may be pigmentation issues left over, whether it's dark spots or light spots. And that also becomes concerning for people who have brown skin, is really the pigmentation issues that are associated with having inflammatory skin disease. And when we think about other patients, of other ethnicities or other racial, groups that have self-identified, they may even in the literature have reported features that may be different. So, when we think about, categorization of people, we know that a lot of these things are, have been made up over time. But in the medical literature, that's often how some things are reported. And with patients of Asian descent, we know that the patients of Asian descent can look like a a variety of skin tones, depending on what area they descend from. However, it has been taught that commonly Asian patients may have more small lesions of psoriasis as compared to very large lesions of psoriasis, and that may be, one feature. Those of Hispanic ethnicity have been reported to experience more severe psoriasis as well as pustular psoriasis. So there have been some reported differences in the literature when it just comes to visually how to make the diagnosis and how is the condition going to look different. And of course, as a adult and pediatric dermatologist, I really can't let a slide go by without even mentioning that those in the pediatric population can even have psoriasis on the face. So that's often an area that we think about, oh, this must be atopic dermatitis. This certainly cannot be psoriasis. But people often forget that even teenagers, like our patient in our clinical case, they can have psoriasis as well.
Absolutely, keeping the differential broad. Can you talk about how some of the disparities in diagnosis of you've seen in your clinical practice as people have referred patients to you?
I think one good example, and is actually supported by evidence in the literature, that patients of color often are more likely to have a skin biopsy as part of their journey to getting a psoriasis diagnosis. And that is certainly true, even for me as a dermatologist. You want to say, okay, this is what it looks like, but let's just really make sure. It's like, okay, yeah, here we have another. Another case of psoriasis. So it definitely is a condition that sometimes people, we have to take it a little bit step further to really confirm that diagnosis. But with all the passing time, that means that there's often a delay the diagnosis of psoriasis. So that means that if the diagnosis is delayed, then the proper treatments are delayed as well. And then the biggest, elephant in the room is that, even when patients do have psoriasis, even being able to get to a subspecialist who can prescribe more aggressive medications may be an issue as well. So
Absolutely.
there are layers and layers and layers that kind of go is becomes part of the story about why is that severity of disease that we see when they finally show up so severe. And I would challenge our listeners to really think about how we started our conversation off today. We started it talking about social determinants of health. And that's a great example of how access and, socioeconomic issues may lead to that person showing up in front of you in a delayed presentation. But also the diagnosis can also further add to that delay as well.
Exactly. And so it may be that Latinos don't have worse cases of disease. They just, by the time they're diagnosed, their cases have gotten worse because of the delays, et cetera. It's hard to know.
Right,
Okay.
exactly. We have to
So
keep that in mind.
let's go back to our case with Miguel and see how he's doing.
Sure. So we are back to Miguel and his current medications. We think about, what he's on already. He reports on being on hydrocortisone, which was prescribed in the past by his primary care physician, and triamcinolone was added when he went to his recent visit at the emergency department. But he's tried them. They really have not been effective for clearing the rash that he has. On exam, it's noted that he has some diffuse dryness of the skin, as well as some plaques on the skin as well. So kind of these thickened areas of psoriasis on the skin. And he just says, these areas just never go away. And I think that's a great part of the history because, some skin conditions, they kind of move around. You may itch here, you may have a rash there, that kind of moves around. But he's saying, look, these things just never go away regardless of what I put on. He's also asked family members, hey, what can I use on this? These other medicines are not working. But regardless of whether he's using a home remedy or if he's using the topical medications provided by the ER and also his primary, this rash is not getting better. So I'm glad that, Miguel found his way to dermatology.
Absolutely. All right. So now that he's here in the dermatology office, let's talk about treatment. What works, and then what are some of the disparities that we've seen in treatment for psoriasis as well?
Yeah, so the literature that's come out specifically, about psoriasis has been interesting, and we've touched on some of it. So access to care and wait time specifically for, dermatology, maybe, 3 to 6 months to even see a dermatologist. So that's a barrier. Also, there was a study that showed that Asian patients who have psoriasis, they time the visits with the clinic dermatologist, and they found that they experienced less face-to-face time with the dermatologist. And so, that is definitely concerning because, we are prescribing all these medications that have that definitely deserve a conversation, and to see that some patients don't really, have that robust of a visit can all, that's something to kind of make us think to say, wow, we need to make sure that all of our patients understand what's happening and fully have all of their questions answered. And thirdly, people of color are more likely to be given topical treatments like the patient in our case today, Miguel. So we're going to talk, in the slides to come about some other things that we can do for Miguel. But often topical medications may not cut it for moderate to severe psoriasis. And there are tons of biologic medications available. So it's not that they're not available, but there's something going on where we're not making that leap to get the patients more aggressive treatments, specifically biologics. And then finally, when we talk about patients when they actually do get, when Black patients do receive biologics, they may be given less information, less education about the different treatment choices. And also there may be an issue, even with health literacy about, how is this drug going to get covered, and how do I navigate this system of prior authorization, et cetera. So there are a lot of challenges and barriers, that our patients face. And then we, when we think about it in the context of a condition, with every single thing that I said, just think that weeks and months and years may be passing in between each time a patient kind of gets knocked down by our system to say, oh my goodness, another roadblock. And it's not just a few days. It could be months. It could be years before that patient gets back on track to be able to get the medical care that they deserve.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the medical care that Miguel deserves.
Okay. So, with Miguel, some of the things in the case that I hope that our viewers are really picking up is that these lesions were persistent. They are affecting his quality of life. And so this, in the case, the next thing that happens is one of my favorite parts of the visit, which is to really talk about what can we do? What are the treatment options that we have? So a discussion about the treatments occur with both the patient and his parents as well. And one of the things is thinking about what's happening in the patient's life. We know that this is a high school student who may be involved in lots of activities at school. We know that they may have an issue being able to come to do visits regularly, and we want to pick a treatment that can be convenient, that they feel comfortable with the safety profile of. And so the biologic medication that was decided on is ustekinumab. And that medication is dosed like every 3 months, during the maintenance phase. So that is a good option. He only has to think about it every 3 months. So I think that was that is the medication that they decided upon. And so I think that was major because that's also a biologic as well. So hopefully it will begin to treat his psoriasis, and he'll be able to wear his shorts again and also wear his short sleeves as well, which was one of the issues that he brought up at the beginning of our case.
That is wonderful. And it's so nice to have such a long-acting agent, particularly for teens. I think about, I do a lot of diabetes work, and so many of my colleagues are working with type 1 diabetes in teenagers and the sort of daily management. And so to have something that can work for months without the teens having to think about it is really a slam dunk. So let's move on to our second learning objective, which is to integrate therapies to optimize long-term outcomes in patients with psoriasis. So, Kendra, we just went through a wonderful case that highlights the disparities in how psoriasis may initially present. So it's going to be helpful for us to think about the long-term effects in the management of psoriasis. So before we get to our next case, where we'll explore that a little bit more, let's talk about some of the disparities in the long-term treatment and outcomes of psoriasis that we just know about in the literature. Can you talk a little bit about some of that?
Oh, yes. This is a great topic to include here. And I don't know if you remember, but at the beginning of the talk, you talked about dermatology and how dermatology is definitely way more than skin deep. And we have to think about systemically, how can something on the skin be affecting something on the inside of our body? So this is a
That's right.
great time to kind of talk about that in the context of psoriasis. So with psoriasis, patients can be ill. They can have other things going on. So whether that is psoriatic arthritis can occur. We also know that patients with psoriasis may have other comorbidities like metabolic syndrome, diabetes, high blood pressure, issues with their cardiovascular system. So it can be a very serious condition that's way more than just skin deep. And we know that with biologic treatments, really treating patients from the inside out, we're actually able to affect some of those long-term outcomes that are so important. But particularly with our patients of color, those of Hispanic ethnicity, our Black patients, Asian patients, they even have a significantly higher chance of being hospitalized for their psoriasis. And this is something we don't really see that often, but when it does happen, it's our patients of color that it happens to. Also, just thinking about, how much of the body surface is covered with psoriasis, and Black patients and Asian patients have a higher likelihood of having a much larger percentage of their bodies covered, with psoriasis. And as I kind of hinted at before, psoriatic arthritis definitely can happen. And in Black patients, particularly who have psoriatic arthritis, they had a higher, studies have shown they've had a higher prevalence of hypertension and diabetes and obesity and gout. And they were more likely to still not be treated with a biologic, but be treated with a different type of steroid sparing, systemic steroid sparing medication options instead of with biologics. So we still have a lot of work to do to really help with some of these statistics, because behind every statistic is a real patient that's going to interface with us at some point, and we definitely want to make sure that we are ready to present the options and make patients feel as comfortable as possible about being able to proceed with those options. And the final bullet on the screen is important, and it talks about education levels. So we think about some people here in the US specifically who have really faced a lot of hardship when it comes to education. And a lot of those patients, they come from communities of color. So that lower educational attainment has definitely been associated with increased disease severity. So we think about the psoriasis, we layer social determinants of health, and then we kind of combine it with the clinical, then this is what we get when we talk about psoriasis specifically.
Yes. And I one of the things that you said that I think it's really important for us as we are learning more and more about cardiovascular disease and these other metabolic things as inflammatory states, as pro-inflammatory states. And then we know about these inflammatory conditions, these skin conditions, these inflammatory arthritides, then obviously there would be an overlap between the two. And so to see the statistical and epidemiological evidence showing the overlap. So for us as clinicians, as primary care providers, to be able to say, wait a minute, these things are increasing, they're mutually reinforcing. And so if I see one, should I be thinking about the other and be more aggressive in the treatment for both of these conditions? So thank you for like making sure that we are increasing our antennas for both of those. So let's leap into our case. It's a female this time, and her name's Latoya. Can you tell us about her?
Sure. So Latoya is a 23-year-old. She is a Black female patient. She works full time and she was diagnosed with psoriasis in the past. And currently she's on a topical combination agent with betamethasone, which is a strong topical steroid, and also calcipotriene. And she is here to get a second opinion because she really just didn't feel like her symptoms were being well controlled with her previous clinician. And so she's just here to talk about some other ideas, next steps, kind of get an evaluation to see, what we think about her skin today.
Great. So based on her presentation, it sounds like she might benefit from stepping up her medications. Can you talk to the audience about disparities in the management of more complex psoriasis?
Sure. I think it's important to, kind of listen to our patient. So Latoya just basically said, she just didn't feel like things were right. Seems like there was some sort of disconnect that she felt that she was trying to get more or needed more out of the visit. And I hear that time and time again on a daily basis. So the disparities in the management of complex psoriasis really speaks to that feeling. So, for an example, Hispanic and Black patients have reported more provider-related bias and stereotyping, misdiagnosis or delayed diagnosis, and then white patients. And then also they've reported having lower quality of life and also less likely to receive the systemic treatments that we've already talked about that are so critical with this condition. There was even a study that looked at a Medicare predominant population of Black patients, and they found that those with moderate to severe psoriasis that they're 70% less likely to receive biologic treatment. These are huge numbers. So, as a researcher, I think about this and it's like, okay, we still have a lot of work to do.
A
And to
lot,
really
70%.
understand that is 70% less likely to receive a biologic treatment. So we really need to dive a little bit, not a little bit, a lot deeper, into that. That goes beyond, our webinar today, but just to think, if you have a patient who has a skin condition like psoriasis and about the systemic implications of that, definitely do what you can to get the patient to seek specialty care and really have that conversation. Sometimes with patients, it may take me more than one conversation of discussing what the options are to actually get them on board with trying the treatment. And that is totally okay too.
Great. Well, let's talk more about Latoya and her management and catch us up on how she's doing.
Sure. So Latoya, one of the things that she was most concerned about is that her rash was really spreading. Her psoriasis was not getting better, and now she's noticed that she has a rash on her scalp as well. And her on physical exam was really notable for hyperpigmented patches and plaques on the abdomen, on the back, and characteristically with people who have brown skin, she had violaceous plaques on her thighs and her buttocks, and also around her hairline, there were hyperpigmented, well demarcated plaques around the frontal hairline, and also creeping down to her forehead, and also around the back of the scalp, or the occipital hairline as well, had a hyperpigmented plaque around it as well. And, as we began to really talk about how this is affecting her, she talks about how, she's very active and she swims 3 to 4 days a week. And, she's now having to face questions with people who are often also at the pool to say, what's going on with your skin? What is that? And now it's around her. It's peeking through the scalp lesions are peeking through her swim cap that she says she has to wear because she's like, this really protects my hair. I have to wear this swim cap. But she's now noticing she can't even hide the areas around her scalp. So she is really seeking, more aggressive treatment. So a conversation is had about a biologic therapy and biologic therapies for psoriasis. And guselkumab is the medication that was selected for her, or with her,
And
I should say.
Great. So I'm just going to say two things. One, for all of our audience, if you aren't aware, Black women and their hair is a huge thing. And so the additional layer of work and management and treatment of Black women's hair is a huge thing. And so to have a scalp condition as a woman of color, is an additional layer and barrier for management and quality of life. And so that's just something else to put out there for our primary care physicians and our dermatologists. And the second question, the second sort of thing I wanted to mention or just to say is, why did we choose this biological agent as opposed to the one we chose for the pediatrician and the pediatric patient that we saw previously?
Yeah, so with this medication, because Latoya had already used some other combination medication in the past, and she really wanted something new. She wanted to feel like she was using something that was current, that was something that was recently proved. She wanted a great, she wanted a side effect profile that she was comfortable with. And also she wanted to know that it had been studied, on people who had scalp psoriasis specifically. So that is why we, went with that medication. And that was something that she was on board with. And it was a medicine that she could keep up with, with her life. She could do her own dosing. So that's why we selected that medication for her.
Excellent. Thank you so much for these additional insights. So it's important that we think not only about the delay in prescribing effective treatments for patients, but really think about how we can integrate individualized care for patients with psoriasis and think about their unique conditions for, kids and teenagers who may not be, able to, manage this every day to adults who may have different places where the psoriasis is, who have more, control, that are looking for different things. And so, as with any other disease, tailoring care to the specific context, the social cultural context, the lived experience is going to be key. Also true for psoriasis. Anything that you want to add specific to that?
I mean, I think you hit on a lot of the points there, but definitely, for patients, we want to make it as convenient as possible for them. So I think convenience is in by way of, medications that they can do at home on their own that may be convenient for the patient or their or families. And then also, how a drug is delivered. So some people, may like a pen form. Some people may prefer a syringe. So they may prefer other medication vehicles as well. So that also can go into it as well. Also, how severe is the disease? So if it's not very severe, then yes, maybe doing topicals are maybe all the patient needs. But when it gets to be more severe, then you do want to think about doing more aggressive treatments. And also, insurance as well does play a role too. So you want to make sure that, that you know about what the patient's insurance is and be familiar with all of the programs that are available to help to assist the patient to be able to get the medications that they actually need. So there's definitely some work to do on both ends. And we do know that, some patients of some of with some genetic markers may be at more risk for, one type of psoriasis or another. So, that also may play a role in the medication that's selected to treat them.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Wonderful insights. Let's check back in one last time with Latoya and wrap her case up.
Okay, so it's 3 months later. So we have our follow-up with Latoya, and her symptoms with guselkumab have improved. So she's very happy about that. And she even reports that, she's continuing to do her swimming, which is great for her overall health and her cardiovascular system for sure. But she says, hey, no one is really staring at my psoriasis areas anymore. So although it's only been 3 months, she's already showing improvement. And then we talk about, for any kind of stubborn areas that are on her scalp, we talk about, what does she want to do to address those. And so we talk about a variety of options, whether that is a medication that is in a liquid dropper, or is it a medication that's in an ointment form or a mousse form. So we kind of talk about options that she can use for her scalp that really complement what she is doing with her hair. So I always try to give people options when it comes to medication vehicles for that specific reason, and particularly for patients who have tightly coiled hair. We want to make sure that we're giving them medications in a vehicle that they will use and will not cause any additional dryness for their hair.
Thank you. Excellent, excellent discussion. I've always learned so much from these, from my own personal CME session. That's a wonderful role being a moderator. Thank you so much, Kendris, for joining us. I'm going to try and summarize our discussion with our SMART goals, and those are ones that are specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. So this is what I hope our audience can take away from this presentation and apply to your own practice. So first, to identify the impact of social determinants or drivers of health in dermatology and dermatology care. Second, to identify disparities in the diagnosis of psoriasis, especially in patients from racial and ethnic underserved populations with diverse skin presentations. Third, to identify disparities in the treatment of psoriasis, especially again in these underserved patient populations. And then last is to integrate strategies to individualize treatment in the care of patients with psoriasis to help address these inequities that we see and to help improve patient outcomes. So this CMEO briefcase is part of a four-part CME CE initiative, and we really hope that you'll take advantage of and participate in all of the activities in the series because they're all wonderful. These activities cover strategies to address racial and ethnic disparities across the therapy across a number of therapeutic areas, and I really encourage you to join us for the entire initiative. By participating in these activities, you demonstrate your own personal commitment to improving health equity for all patients. So the CMEO D&I Hub also has a number of resources available to you to help further your own personal journey on diversity, equity, and inclusivity. So again, Kendris, just thank you so much. In just this brief amount of time, I have learned so much, and so I hope our audience has well. Thank you for this robust and candid and educational conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
What a pleasure. For our audience to receive credit for this activity, please complete the post-test and evaluation. We really appreciate your feedback. We listen to what you're telling us. We really want to hear from you, what you liked, how we can improve, and what additional topics you'd like to have us address. So I sincerely want to thank you, our audience, for your commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusivity education, because together, all together, we can strive to provide the best and most equitable care to all of our patients, particularly those who are most marginalized and underserved. Thank you for joining us.